Joining me today, the filmmaker of The Rising Tide, Mr. Robert Adanto, next on The Culture Catch. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Bennett Media Studios. For all of your digital needs, visit 723washington.com. The man behind Rising Tide, a new documentary on the exploding Chinese art scene in the world on the global stage. Robert, welcome to the Culture Catch.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Robert, how did you get involved with the project? You're a fellow Los Angeles chap, right? Born and bred?
I am.
And what was it about the Chinese art scene that first interested you?
That's a good question. I'm interested in art, but I wasn't originally looking at the Chinese art scene to begin with. I'm also a teacher. I teach an integrated class of history and English, and I was working as a researcher for a friend of mine who was doing a documentary on Cuba, and I went with her to Cuba, and it was a great experience, and I just thought I'd like to make a film myself. And in 2005, in the summer, I noticed that there were a lot of books in bookstores about the rise of China and what it would mean for the rest of the world. And so I started researching, reading articles by different people like Orville Schell, Ross Terrell, Gordon Chang. And as much as I read about them, no one really agreed like where China would be in the next 10 to 15 years. They all said, you know, this might happen if these things take place.
You mean as an economic power or just culturally or both?
A little bit of both. You know, they were all fascinated with the fact that China had adopted capitalism, but it hadn't liberalized its political system. One fellow, Min Zin Pei, from the Carnegie Foundation, he has a book called The Trap Transition, where he argues basically that China has taken two steps when it should have taken four. It's taken two big steps, but there's still crony capitalism. There's still a lot of corruption endemic in their system. And because they haven't liberalized and moved towards democracy, he says there's going to be some tension. And it's interesting right now with the economic downturn, whether or not they'll be able to sustain their population and maintain power. You know, Gordon Chang speaks about in his book, and it's so telling. I use him as a narrator, that given what's gone on economically, the country is not maintaining the growth that the party needs to satisfy 1.3 billion people. There's a lot of new wealth in China, a lot of economic growth. The architecture that you see in the coastal cities is incredibly impressive, but it hasn't spread to everyone. And the party uses these symbols of modernization to sell this message that we're on our way, continue on, and we will all get there. But now that the economic downturn has happened, so many migrant workers that have moved to cities like Shenzhen and Guangzhou have actually retreated from participating in what was the largest migration in world's history, moving to the Pearl River Delta. They're actually moving back to farms that can't sustain them. So this year will be a really important year to see what actually goes on in China.
But yet we need them. Don't we have enormous debt that we with the Chinese, as do other countries? Russia recently, Russia needs their oil, right? We need their labor force because we've exported all of our common labor jobs.
And they buy up all our debt. Yes, we have a symbiotic relationship that's very complex. We're intertangled with them, so we do need China to succeed. I think it's one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton traveled to Asia, to China. She finished off that trip to make sure that, you know, China knows that we're there, that we need them, and that there needs to be that responsible stakeholder mentality on both of our parts rather than just placing the responsibility on China.
So a lot of this really was responsible for this cultural explosion that we're seeing, and specifically in your movie with the within the art world. You know, I mean, I guess China was neglected in contemporary art for many, many years, but not so much anymore. We look around the New York City, Chelsea art museums, and we see a proliferation now, really hot Chinese artists.
Yeah, there's what some people call as a renaissance taking place, and it really started with, and this is why I focus so much on the politics and the economics and the cultural aspects. Mao Zedong dies in 1976, and the reform period begins with Deng, and 30 years of economic growth have given rise to this burgeoning art movement, and it's really been in the last 10 years or so that more and more, you know, European and American curators have seen this work and seen the vitality and the importance of it. And this is that rise. And it's why I call the film The Rising Tide, because for me, it's like just really the beginning of a wider acceptance and, you know, more people outside the museum scene or the gallery scene are saying, wow, this is really interesting. This is very cool. And so part of my mission in making the film is to kind of show like how far China has come in these 30 years.
Now, there's a very interesting point in the movie, very telling for me personally, that one of the artists was complaining that she thought, even though with this new liberation artistically, culturally, she almost wished that she had a simpler economic she actually was hearkening back to the communism her parents lived with, because she thought it was easier to maintain her, you know, an identity or have some kind of hope for the future.
Yeah, that was Chen Qulin, and that speaks to two aspects that writers like Orville Schell have discussed. That first off, you really have to see how dominant a force Mao was. He was a leader. Gordon says he was a cult leader for a nation. He formed the nation, and he was their guiding force, and everything that you had to be, everything about your identity was embodied in not being materialistic, being part of this larger movement. And then he died, and there was a vacuum. And what filled that vacuum? Capitalism and making money and striving towards modernization at a rapid pace and not really looking back at the horrors of the Cultural Revolution, speeding forward, making progress, working hard. And a lot of these younger artists who didn't grow up during the Cultural Revolution, never grew up under Mao, are now a little apprehensive about, like, where are we going? What happened to the China that was? A lot of the artists are articulating a not necessarily a dissatisfaction, but a little bit of a confusion about the ambiguity of this new hybrid world that's still, on the surface, a communist country, but it's adopted this kind of freewheeling type of capitalism. And it's, we got to remember, an ancient culture with 5,000 years of history, and now it's adopting this system that has never been in place in China, and now it's taken off, and there's been a lot of great things that have come with it, but still there is ambivalence with things and projects like the Three Gorges Dam. And that's what I think Chen Qulin is discussing in her work.
Also, I was feeling like, you know, we wave the flag of middle America as being, you know, the last of the dying breed, and when the economy is strong, the, you know, middle America all that is attended to that is strong. The middle class, is that something they're struggling to identify with, to hold on to? Is that because with communism, you all had the same caste system, and then you had the Communist Party itself, who were land barons, I guess, or, you know, would be
the,
like,
elites.
The,
yeah,
elites, like they are in our culture, any democratic culture, those that have. Are we losing the middle class? Are they gaining a middle class in China? What's shaking out with all of this?
It's you know, because it's such a huge country, the latest research says that there is a growing middle class in China. It's largely in those coastal cities, Shanghai, Beijing, and also some larger metropolises. Chongqing has a larger middle class. There are more new millionaires in China than ever before. But there's also, with that, a rapidly growing divide between the poorest of the poor and the richest of the rich. So even though there is a new middle class, there's a huge divide that's increasing. And that's also going to create more and more tension. There have been a lot of upset people in areas where rivers have been polluted, where because of this kind of capitalism taking place without checks and balances, without like national agencies checking things and corruption, people are upset and taking to the streets or to the village, literally, that, you know, we're not going to take this anymore. So the government has to go and squelch those kind of uprisings. And these are things that are probably going to increase as the economy, as we go further and further into this recession.
And yet the artist has to document all of this and try to sell this to the people that can afford the art, to say these are the problems with our society. You know, and that seems to me to be the face of any artist, really, right? You're a mirror of the cultural fallout.
And that's, yes, and that's one of the things that I think they're grappling with, because I know artists, Chinese artists that are living here in the United States, that first off are getting a better look at their own country via Western journalism. They're getting a little more perspective. That distance has allowed them to kind of see the information, take it in, and kind of have a view that isn't necessarily what the party would want or what would be acceptable in China. There's an interesting thing going on right now with the artists. Recently, the government announced that it was going to build national museums for the 12 most important living artists. And it's something that I examine in the film, where some people are saying these elites, these artists, because many of them have gone to the leading academies, all of them have that are in my film. Their parents, too, were professors. A lot of them are feeling like, can I go that far? And are they being co-opted? Is the government saying, you know what? You're doing well. You can travel. You can go to all the international biennales. You have this lifestyle. Just don't cross that line. And my take on it and the way I've organized the film is to say that this art, and some of it, a lot of the art in my film, kind of pushes the limits and goes past the line, that this is the beginning of the end of the way the party is today. Not that the party is going to collapse and that China is going to go into mayhem, but adjustments are going to be made, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years, because it has to.
Well, we have a world economy now, Robert. And, I mean, the stage has been set where if one country falls, if one huge country like America or China falls, it's a domino effect.
Right.
So it's all for one and one for all. It's a global economy. And whether that's, you know, the U.S. dollar, or British sterling, or the euro, something, you know, we are all beholden on the other countries to prop us.
I do see progress in the way the Chinese, for example, we look as recently as when the SARS epidemic broke out. They didn't say anything about it. They kept it to themselves. And yet when they had the earthquake in the Sichuan province, they immediately let the Red Cross in. They immediately, you know, told the world that, you know, we need your help, which for me is a step in the right direction that, you know, we are all in this together. Recently, the Chinese have also recounted their numbers concerning HIV and AIDS. So there are global challenges. Something that comes to mind is global warming. All of this, you know, a lot of people don't recognize that a lot of the air quality, they say that by 2015, the bulk of air pollution in the LA basin will have been generated from China. So it doesn't matter if Arnold pushes for stricter exhaust limitations and things like that. We need to be engaged with China. China needs to be more open.
Well, that was one of the problems with the Kyoto Accord, right?
Right.
Bush said, so what if we do all this stuff? If the Chinese don't sign off on it, doesn't matter, right?
Right. So we need to recognize also, we see some progress with China being invited into the G20. They need to be a part of every economic meeting, whereas before, China, India, Brazil, they weren't part of the team. And the reality says, you know what? they need to be there. They need to. We need to share with them. We need to find out what they're feeling.
Now, Robert, in making the movie, one of the big picture items for me is where does China sit culturally? Are they in the middle of a new revolution, a new cultural revolution? Are we in the, if we just seen the tip of the iceberg in this revolution with all of these changes? Now, there's still censorship with the internet in China. Now, obviously, there are ways around that, but isn't a lot of, wasn't Google censored in China? What they, you know, and some of the other bigger, AOL, I'm not sure about AOL, but.
Yeah, there's still what's called the Great Firewall. There are certain subjects, you can never look up Tiananmen Square, Falun Gong. Topics like that are forbidden. Certain artists, like Zhang Oh, who's actually in the film, her website is unavailable. I actually just learned, because I'm going to go film, I'm going to go screen the film in China, that at least this one gallerist wasn't able to find my website. So, yes, there's definitely a firewall. I don't know if there's a there's a renaissance, a burgeoning art scene taking place. But I don't want to use the word revolution. I don't want to use it lightly. I mean, it usually means like a massive change for everyone. Things are changing rapidly in China. It's changed for the better for a lot of people. They mainly are in the urban areas. There are still people living on $2 a day. But this economic crunch is not something to take lightly, as we all know here in the United States. I think it could create those shocks that could lead to disruption of the way things are. I think the party has taken a lot of steps to, you know, just recently they had their own stimulus package and they went out into the media and said, look, we're saving the country. The party is working to solve this problem. We know you're suffering. We know you've lost your jobs. They had China had like something like 20% unemployment. They're getting their slogan out there that, you know, we're working on this. We're dealing with this. We're going to make it through. Let's see where they are in June. Let's see where the world is in June.
Well, you know, then that begs the question, will any artist be able to afford a lifestyle, or will you have to have a real job? Will you have to be a teacher? Will you have to be gainfully employed, even though you'd love to sell your work as a musician? And that's another thing, you know, China's music doesn't export like China's art does. And for that matter, a lot of countries it doesn't, unless they're English speaking for music.
Right.
Very, very difficult. Film, yes, because we've seen great Chinese filmmakers and we've seen them, but still not to the export expectations that Americans have with our exporting culture. You know, where will the blip of Chinese culture being imported impact American culture, would you guess, in the next few years?
Well, okay, I think those are kind of two questions in that the art world in general has taken a hit. Things have slowed down in the auction houses in general. People are not necessarily going to go invest in a rising Chinese star. People are becoming a little more conservative. Is this a good investment? Okay, that doesn't mean that even that's great art, but at least some people have deemed things important enough to collect. Part of the reason why these Chinese artists have risen to that level prior to this economic meltdown is that they do have stability. For the first time, these artists are not starving, trying to eke out an existence. They are the middle class. They are the elite. They've gone to the right academies. I think that they will continue to make art, good art, and have the support, not of the country, but, you know, from Westerners, from the gallery systems, to be able to do what they're doing. Those are two elements of I think, the question you're asking. This economic crunch is going to affect everyone. It could affect whether or not a gallery has the money or the museum has the money to bring an artist out to travel to the Biennale. I think the weaker Biennales and art festivals are going to be hurt by this. But it's going to affect Italian artists and French artists and German artists. It's going to hurt the whole art community. So things could change.
How about the Chinese galleries themselves? Are those controlled by the government?
Actually, most people don't know. You know, we know about globalization. Mm-hmm. The Chinese do it their way. And we've accommodated that. And that's the interesting thing about American policy. They still, even if a McDonald's or a Starbucks or these businesses go, they still own the majority of all those independent companies. We have to kind of pay and play by their rules. Even you mentioned earlier Google and
AOL.
You know, they allowed the Chinese to influence those blocks in their internet system. And some people said, wow, you're actually helping them find people who want to search those things. Because there was a case where some people were rounded up, bloggers that were using, having discussions about certain things, that Google had actually built a system that was allowing them to identify, like, who's doing this? Mm. So are we being complicit in those actions? That's why at the beginning of my film, I start off with, you know, the Chinese see themselves as the center of the world, and that they thought that way 150 years ago, and they see themselves as taking that place. At the end of that longer quotation, Gordon says, like, it's something to be wary about, like, whether or not they truly believe in this system they're engaging. They're 20% of the world's population, and they're buying everybody's debt. They could have a longer vision, which I believe, a longer vision of where this is headed, and if we could stay in power and maintain stability, we'll be top dog and alter the way economics and the way everything is done. And that's something that a lot of the writers in the FT are currently discussing in terms of the petrodollar rich areas of the world, whether it be Iran, whether it be Russia, where they've engaged the global system, they're participating. Are they necessarily going to be democratic? It's too early to say, yes, everyone's falling in line. And that's really what we're seeing with this shock, the end of liberal, that liberal capitalist, like if we make peace with them and put our McDonald's in there, they'll eventually become democratic. I think that's over. I think that's ended. And I think the United States also has to they have to look at what is it that, What values do we want to impart on the world to make the world a better place in 20 years when we're not the economic power that we are today?
Interesting. And at the forefront are the artists who are the barometers of all the change.
Right. They're the harbingers. And that's why I chose to look at them. I just thought, you know, artists for the most part, they live apart. They're within society, they're looking at it, but they've always got that distance enough to kind of look objectively at their world, and they're great feeling people. They're affected by the changes, and what is their job to articulate that?
Now, here's a question. All right, we're looking at the macro dynamics of all of this. How did you get into the micro of who you would decide who would be in your movie? If you've got a Chinese government who's saying these are the 12 pinnacle artists in our culture, and we have a billion people, and there obviously are another million artists out there probably worthy of being included in your movie. How did you decide who should be in and who shouldn't be in?
Okay, I've got to take a step back, but I knew there was going to be interest in China because of the Olympics. I still wanted to make a film that would be seen widely in theaters, but I also knew that Sundance, Berlin, are they ready for a documentary about Chinese artists, and it's 65% of it, it's in Mandarin. Are they ready for a film like that? Are the first people that screen it? I'm not affiliated with the Weinsteins or a big company pushing this film. Think, are they going to be ready for that? And I kind of anticipated that, you know what? The art world is, museums do screenings. Who are the artists that in 3 years when I finish this film are going to be exhibited, talked about? Who currently is deemed an important up-and-coming artist? And so I started to look and see. And then I also found, because in doing the interviews, that these artists under 30 were using video and photography because their world was changing so much. And so it was kind of a combination of like projecting the audience that would be there, but also their work itself. Like a lot of the ideas that I had read about from people like sinologists, think tank people, in a video or in a film, it was all present. Everything about consumer culture, everything about rapid urbanization. So they kind of reinforced ideas, assertions that I would want to make with the film.
So who are some of the names, Robert? Who should we be? I mean, if I was interested in studying beyond, I mean, you have a website, risingtide.com.
The Rising Tide Film.com.
Yeah, you in it, are there links to the Chinese artists in the movie?
There are. There's a page with the cast, and then on every cast picture, you can go directly to a couple of links for each of them, like where they're showing now, bios of them.
And the galleries where you might find them are the museums. Obviously, in New York and L.A., it's going to be a little bit easier to find these Chinese artists. How about in Middle America, Chicago, some of the other, Pittsburgh, Cleveland? You know,
oddly enough, more and more of the Midwest. I know, for example, several of the artists are now in Denver. There's a show in Denver. I just screened the film at the Kansas City Institute of the Arts.
Fantastic.
As Middle America as you can get, pretty much. And those art students love the film, and they're like, I didn't even know this was going on. And I'm sure they're looking at it. I mean, they laughed at certain parts. They were struck by some of the photography.
Right. Fantastic. Robert, the service that you're providing for a lot of people to open their eyes to the world of China, the culture, the art world, it's fabulous. And I think that by doing so, we're probably going to see a lot more proliferation of Chinese art into the West, and that hopefully people will see the value in supporting this art form. I mean, you know, 1 billion people in China. How many of those are artists? How many of those are worthy artists? And as you said, moving forward, 20 years, 30 years from now, how many will be really culturally important artists in the scheme of the world's art scene?
You know, I'm not even sure if the artists that are in my film, even though they've all been they've received critical acclaim, they've traveled the Biennale circuit, a lot of them have made a lot of money. I'm not sure if the great artist is to be found in my film. I actually think that, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, a little bit of the history that Robert Rauschenberger first showed in 1988. And everything that I've read in the scholarship is that the Chinese in 10 years really just ate up everything from Rauschenberg, Warhol, Jeff Koons. They, you know, took in all the postmodernists and now are creating this work after seeing that for the first time. So 10 years of like investigating and seeing and working with that. And now, where are they now? I think the great art will come probably in 20 years. The really, really world, and not just Chinese art.
But a substantial individual.
Yes, somebody, you know, that, and I have that quote because Jackie Wolschlager, the art critic of the FT, said, will the next Picasso be from China in the 21st century? And that's what she was posing. She was just saying, like, when will that person come up? She was really writing part of the article about Yang Fudong, who, sadly enough, I wasn't able to interview for the film. But certainly Xiao Fei, Su Zhen, Wang Qingsong, they're all important artists for this moment. I think they'll be remembered. The thing about them, they all have youth behind them. So when I see the work that Xiao Fei has done in her 20s, now she's 31, where will she be in 20 years? And she's prolific. She does everything, video, photography, she writes plays. And now she's working in Second Life. She's got this thing called China Tracy, where she has an avatar. Wow. And she's created an old world. I mean, yeah, I'm staying on top of all the artists and knowing what they're doing because it's exciting. It is an exciting time in Chinese history and Chinese art history.
Well, maybe it'll be the second Rising Tide.
There we
part
go.
Two. Yeah. Part two to the documentary. Anyway, I want to thank you for being on the Culture Catch. Continued success. And for those of you who are listening to this, I would really encourage you to explore the Chinese art world. It is very, very rich. Forget the historical, which is rich unto itself, but this new contemporary art scene in China. I've been to some of the shows, some of the gallery exhibits, some of the museum pieces. It's really, really cutting edge and fantastic. And Robert, thank you. Thank you for being someone to open our eyes to all of this, to this new and exciting world.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you soon. Dusty Wright with the Culture Catch. I hope you enjoyed my interview with LA filmmaker Robert Adanto. If you like our programming, please leave a comment for us in the iTunes directory. Just type in Culture Catch and leave a review for the audio and or video podcasts. And don't forget to check our website, culturecatch.com, for plenty of written reviews in all areas of the arts. This is Dusty Wright with the Culture Catch. Converge is the word.